Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gray McGregor. I'm a partner of the Harbor Group. And on behalf of my partners, I'd like to welcome you to today's conference call. It's been a really trying start to 2016. And today we wanted to have Robin Gullison on our call to cover off a few items that we think are questions that are very much prominent in investors' minds. Unlike previous calls where Robin's gone through specific slides and talked to a thesis, today he's going to speak to specific questions that have been coming up from our clients. I'm very happy to introduce Robin today. Please take it away.
Thanks, Graham. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. The slides for today's call, I believe, are in your inbox, and they are also posted to our website, theharborgroup.ca, under the market commentary section. And I'll be referring to the slide package, but it's not necessary to have it in front of you. So I'm going to get right into things here. And I guess the first question on everybody's mind, whenever we see significant market volatility like we've seen this year, is this a rerun of 2008? I think that's the first thing that comes to everybody's mind. And we would say no, not in our view. You know, 2008 was an extraordinary time. The big concern then was that the banking system wasn't going to function anymore. We're nowhere near that right now. You also had a very deep recession in 2008. And we look at where we are right now on page two of the slide package, if you're following along. The recession risk priced in by the academic models is near zero right now for the United States. Meanwhile, we have markets that are pricing in a much higher probability of recession than we think is out there. Some markets, if you look at the high-yield bond market, is pricing in a recession probability approaching 50% in the U.S. Now, some of that has to do with what's happening in the energy market, but a lot of the analysts we've been looking at just look at these simple measurements and what are the markets pricing in? Well, they're pricing in a much higher probability of recession than we or they think is likely. So to us, that tells us this is a correction as opposed to the start of a nasty bear market. And just looking at a couple of numbers out there, so a lot of people worry about what's happening in the oil market, and it's particularly germane here in Canada. But if you look at the U.S., it's been 18 months since the oil price peaked, and the U.S. has added 4.2 million private sector jobs. Now, if this were to be something comparable to the other cycles, you'd have to look back and say, well, what happened 18 months after those peaked? Well, 18 months after the tech bubble peaked, you'd already lost 340,000 jobs in the U.S., and 18 months after the housing bubble peaked, you'd lost 1.2 million jobs. So just on that one metric, it doesn't look like the oil bust is going to lead to a recession in the United States. In fact, we think it's actually going to be positive for consumers. We haven't seen the numbers quite come through yet, but history tells you it takes about 18 months. And the way I think of it is, you know, when you first see that gas price drop, nobody's really sure it's permanent yet, so they don't necessarily spend the money. You know, everybody has a view that it's going to bounce back quickly, and that's what everybody thought last year. And, of course, that hasn't happened. Now it's been a year of low gas prices. I think you have the average price in the U.S. is about $1 a gallon. Those savings are probably starting to feel a little more permanent, and they're likely to work their way back into the economy. So bottom line, we don't think this is a rerun of 2008.
So in a nutshell, Robin, what you're saying is you do not see the U.S. economy going into recession. Is it fair to say you're probably going to see perhaps slower growth than we anticipated at the beginning of this year?
Yeah, I think that's been the theme since, you know, 2010. You've seen slower growth than anticipated and lower inflation. And, well, that's a bit disappointing for the kind of progress of the economy and of the country. That's actually been pretty powerful for investors because when you don't have strong growth and you don't have strong inflation, you don't get the excesses building up that typically lead to a recession. So, for example, the last cycle, of course, you had excesses in the housing market because people could borrow for no money down and then with no jobs, et cetera. And you had a huge excess build up in the housing market that had to be wiped out. This cycle, there's no real such excesses building. You have low inflation. You have a central bank who is just barely starting to raise interest rates, and they're probably going to back off on what they thought they were going to do. So they thought they were going to raise rates four times this year. My guess is it's going to be something lower than that. So they're going to try very hard not to hurt the economy. And typically when you get a recession, you have some sort of excess in the economy builds up. It creates inflation. That leads the Fed to tighten monetary policy until you have what we call tight money, and that's usually where you get your recession.
Robin, today we saw the Bank of Canada chose not to increase interest rates, and they even put out their updated their economic forecast. We see that the Bank of Canada is forecasting, I think, for 1.5% growth for this year. Do you think that's achievable in Canada?
In Canada, yeah. So they chose not to cut rates today, which I think is actually a good thing because there's going to be long-tailed effects from the currency that we probably haven't seen yet, and they're waiting for the government of Canada to come out. So I think their forecast is going to have to do with a couple of things. Number one, what happens to the energy price? That's going to be a huge determinant if they can meet that or not. If energy surprises to the upside, then I think the Canadian economy surprises to the upside. The other X factor, and what Mr. Pallad said in the press conference he's waiting for, is what's the federal government going to do? They've pushed off the date for their budget, I believe, to April. So I think he's going to wait to see what kind of stimulus package they propose to determine what they're going to do with monetary policy, and I think that will probably also affect their forecast for growth. So if the government comes through with a larger than expected stimulus package and or oil starts to go up, and then they have a chance of exceeding that growth. But if oil stays sub 30 for the whole year, it'll probably be a bit of a challenge.
Perhaps we could cover off the next question that's on investors' minds.
Sure. The next one I think is natural after is this 2008 is how long is it going to last? How long is the volatility in the market going to last? And I guess a few things to say about volatility. The U.S. market went through an extraordinary period from 2012 to 2014 where you didn't have a 10% correction in the market. Typically that happens every year to 18 months. So that was an extraordinary period of low volatility. Since then, volatility has normalized somewhat. I'm not saying what's happening today is normal, but to get a 10% correction every year to 18 months is fairly normal, and that's, I think, what we're going through now. So again, what we're seeing right now is not normal. We think it'll probably subside within a few months as people get their heads around what growth and profits are going to look like this year. Stabilization in oil, I think not necessarily even a rebound, just stability in oil going out of the headlines for a little while, I think will be a real positive and help sentiment improve a little bit and volatility die down. And on page 3 of the presentation, we have a chart of they call it the VIX, the Volatility Index for U.S. stocks. We also call that the Fear Gauge. You can see that today it spiked up to 31, which is pretty high. It typically got as high as 40 or 50 when you have a real stressed market. I think what you can see taking away from looking at this chart is you get a big spike in volatility and then it dissipates. So my forecast would be that we've had a spike now. Is it over yet? Difficult to say, but it's not often that you get a spike going on for a very long period of time unless you have some sort of crisis taking place. So I look for this to dissipate as the news flow starts to die down around the energy market and you start to get a better idea of what profits are going to look like for U.S. companies this year.
So in a nutshell, we need to have time pass for people to calm down a little bit, more rational behavior come into securities prices.
That's right, exactly. People have to step back and kind of take a look at what they own, what they think valuations are. When you have moves like we've had this year, I think people don't have time to sit back and think, they just react. And I think you need people to kind of take a sober look at what's happening and what valuations look like, because they've changed materially for some companies.
Okay. Thank you. Next question.
So quickly, just speaking about oil, our view is that oil is a story of oversupply, not deficient demand. Demand continues to grow. But you've had a couple of things happen that I'm pretty sure everybody on the call is aware of. You've had the massive growth in U.S. production from the shale revolution and the fracking companies, and you've had OPEC almost disband, really, and have no cap on their production. And originally people thought, you know, well, does it make any sense these companies are producing more when the price is going down? But for a lot of them it does, because it's about revenue maximization. So if you were an oil-producing country who has a lot of promises out to your citizens that cost a lot of money, if the oil price goes down, you're going to produce more because you need the money no matter how you're going to get it. Now you're at a point where it's probably getting to be counterproductive economically. Geopolitically, maybe it's a different story for some of these countries, but if you look at what's happening in the U.S., supply is finally starting to roll over a little bit, and I think if you look at the economics of the fracking business, it's going to be very hard for production in the U.S. to stay flat, let alone grow. Because what these companies basically did was raise money, drilled a well, you know, spent the cash flow on another well, and once they got big enough, they took on some debt and use that to grow. Well, now the debt market is closed to them. We're starting to see bankruptcies, and cash flow has gone to almost nothing. And these wells decline at a very, very rapid rate and take a lot of investment in order to stimulate the wells and create production. So I think we'll continue to see U.S. production decline as long as oil prices stay down here. The one caveat would be if you get some sort of spike in oil prices like you had last year, that gives the survivors a chance to hedge and kind of live to fight another day. So for the long-term health of the oil market, it might be better to price it to just kind of stay down here for a little while and let the process work itself out, and that might actually take out some of the weaker hands in the oil market. So the bottom line is, you know, we think it's more of a supply story than a demand story. You're going to have to cure this oversupply condition, and it's likely going to be done by the U.S. frackers. They're the swing producer now.
Thank you.
And, you know, looking at the oil and the TSX on page 5 of the presentation, I've got a chart of the TSX and the 100-day correlation with the oil price, and it's sitting at about 60% right now. You know, it used to be that the Canadian dollar was the main oil proxy. It traded one-to-one with oil, and it's definitely doing that now just as much as it ever has. But it's also happening more and more to the TSX. Even though the energy weighting in the TSX is down sharply, the TSX is trading at one of the highest correlations with oil it has in years. So that tells me that a lot of non-energy companies, which are now a larger part of the index than they were a year ago, are trading with a high correlation with oil. And to us, that probably breeds opportunity because even though most companies in the Canadian economy are exposed to energy somewhat, it's probably not to the degree that's being priced in to the market right now. So we think a lot of non-energy companies are being painted with the oil brush. For example, the banks, the REITs, the rails, all these sorts of companies. And we think it's starting to build some opportunities in this space.
What ultimately do you think can lead to that disconnect from that relationship?
I think it'll be, you know, earnings delivered from these companies. So, for example, for the banks, if they report the next couple of quarters and the loan losses from the energy space are not nearly as bad as the market thinks or the market fears, that probably leads investors to go back to the space and not be quite as worried about it. So I think it's going to be them running their businesses and proving that they're not fully tied to oil.
Thank you.
So shifting gears to the banks, on page 6 of the presentation, this is a very simply a chart of the bank's price-to-book value. So the banks are trading at about 1.5 times your book value. This is the lowest valuation since the financial crisis. And, you know, the story for the banks isn't all rosy, right? Growth is definitely slowing for Canadian consumer credit. Losses are going to go up in all likelihood, but we think a lot of bad news is currently priced in. The banks traded a price-earnings ratio on average of about 9.7 times. Some are lower than that. And the dividend yield on the banks is 4.7%. They're likely to continue to grow that dividend. And you compare this to a world where you have a five-year Canada bond of 0.6%, we think the banks are getting pretty interesting here. You know, our analyst thinks that once you get to the second quarter results and they get the energy losses out of the way, that could be a catalyst for the banks to start to behave better.
Just, Robin, there's been a lot of media attention on our Canadian banks, and many of our clients, you know, that the bank shares represent a large amount of their portfolios or a meaningful component. There's been discussion about investors outside of Canada betting against our banks or shorting them, selling them in anticipation of buying them in the future at lower prices. Can you speak to this a little bit in terms of the impact it's had on price and what we could see in the future?
Yeah, certainly. It's been a theme that's been in play for the last few years. And I guess for a foreign investor, they kind of had a double whammy because they had the share price decline. And most importantly, probably more important to the trade, has been the move in the currency. So they've made good money on this trade and often used it to fund purchases of U.S. banks. But what we've seen most quarters is that they short the banks going into the quarterly results, thinking they're going to be bad. The results end up being fine, and they have to cover their short positions, and the stocks typically trade well after the earnings. So I think on a broader macro basis, we assume this trade is still on in significant size. And if the banks are able to deliver in the next couple of quarters, they probably move on and do something else. You think if, you know, we get a year and a half plus into the oil bust and you haven't seen any big losses accrue to the banks or any devastating losses accrue to them, they've already priced a lot of this in. And if that bad news doesn't happen, my guess would be they kind of go away and do something else. And they're, of course, going to have to buy back the shares in order to do that. So that'd be a natural form of demand for the bank stock.
Okay. Next question that we want to cover off.
Yeah, the next point I would like to make is that the REITs are also trading pretty cheap here. On page 7 of the presentation, we have the discount to net asset value for the Canadian REITs, and the REITs are currently trading at a discount to net asset value that you typically see during a recession. I guess you could say that Alberta is in recession, and that's obviously feeding through to the REIT valuation somewhat, but nevertheless, we think a lot of bad news is priced in. We're not likely to see a recession in all of Canada from what's happening in the oil patch. I think you'd have to see something that happened that affects Ontario and Quebec to get a national recession, but again, we're trading at valuations that are typical of recession, and you're trading at yields that are very, very high compared to Government of Canada bonds. The REIT index yields about 6.5%. And even when you compare it to where corporate bonds in Canada are trading, you're getting a very, very attractive yield. So we think the REITs are one place there's some opportunity, because one of the funny things about the post-financial crisis world has been there's a dearth of yields in all the traditional places, right? So high-quality government bonds, high-quality corporates, GICs yield a fraction of what they used to. But if you go into the equity market, yield is as abundant as it has ever been. And I realize that that's more risky than GIC, and it's a different risk profile. But central banks aren't really giving investors that many options these days for yield. You're kind of being encouraged to go to the equity market for yield, and the good news is that the yields are actually there in pretty good size. And on page 8, I kind of just broaden that argument out to the entire TSX. Again, ex-crisis, the TSX dividend yield is the highest it's been since the early 90s at a minimum, at about 3.5% for the index.
Is that because prices of shares have gone down and the dividends are the same, or actually have we seen real dividend growth?
Well, it's been a combination of both. So if you go back to 4 years ago, the TSX is trading at roughly the same level as that 4 years ago. but the dividend yield is 35% higher. So that 35% change has been the increase in dividends. So you've seen dividends growing, and in the last couple of years, you've also seen the TSX falling. So it's a combination of both, but dividend growth is still alive and well in Canada. It's shifting sectors. You know, it's not going to be so much in the energy space anymore, let's say. But dividend growth has been there. That's been a big contributor to the yields, and you've also seen the yields go up due to what's happened to the valuation. So, again, you know, you've got a 10-year Canada bond that's yielding about 1.1%, and the interest rate risk on bonds is the highest it's ever been. On page 9 of the presentation, looking at sentiment, you know, this is something we look at as kind of a look at the psychology of the market and trying to take the pulse of what people are thinking. And we look at all sorts of different sentiment surveys that basically ask different types of investors, are you bullish, are you bearish, are you neutral, how are you feeling about the market? And the survey on page 9 is from the individual investors, and it comes out of the U.S. And we simply take a ratio of the number of bullish responses to the number of bearish responses and divide it out. And when you get to 0.5, so you have half as many bulls as bears on this chart, it's typically indicative of a near-term bottom. And our economists actually did a little more work on this survey. And when you get to these levels of pessimism outside of a recession, the market was higher one quarter later every time with an average gain of 6.4%. So that's not a forecast, that's not a guarantee, but that's what the historical statistics are. And we do think that's pretty interesting. And we've observed this, you know, in the post-crisis era, this is sort of to be a fairly good timing mechanism for the market. So it's not going to be to the day, but typically when you get pessimism this strong, it doesn't take a lot of good news to turn things around.
So just to that point, Robin, I mean, one of the questions that is asked of us, both all my partners, Peter Carr, myself, John Grant, you know, should I follow the advice of some that have been talked about in the media and sell everything? Is this the beginning of the end? When you look to the evidence that you've pointed out in the slide presentation thus far, your conclusion would be to stay the course, I'm assuming.
Yeah, my conclusion would be to stay the course. You know, our view is that we're not going into a recession in the United States. We think valuations have improved quite substantially, and from lower valuations, you have higher forward returns. So there's, you know, every single day, if you go on the internet, you can find somebody doom and glooming about the stock market, and these people tend to get probably more than their fair share of attention because that's what sells newspapers or brings viewers to television. And once every 5 to 10 years, they'll be right and they'll be big problems. But the rest of that time, they're wrong. So I think they get more attention than they deserve. But that's because people are afraid, right? People are afraid to lose money and afraid of a bear market. And I completely understand that. But the work we've done looking at what the fundamentals are and what's happening in the economy is that we don't think we're in for a rerun of what happened 7 years ago.
Thank you.
And kind of leaning on the sentiment theme a little more on page 10, you know, in the short term, sentiment's what drives the market. In the long term, it's all about earnings growth. And the chart on page 10 shows that in the short term, so in a three-month period, the change in the market, the contribution from the change in the price-earnings ratio versus the change in earnings. And on the short term, it's almost all the PE ratio. If you think about the stock market on any given day, let's say today, right? At one point today, the market was down almost 3%. Did fundamentals change by 3% today? Probably not. You know, almost not at all. So that's, in any given day, the market move is all sentiment-based. Over the long term, on this chart, over 5 years, the change in earnings actually drives over 80% of the market. So the short-term volatility is obviously tough to stomach, but it's all about sentiment. And really, we look for companies that can grow their earnings and cash flows, return cash to shareholders. That's what drives returns over the long term.
Terrific.
So looking a little more at long-term versus short-term on page 11 of the presentation, you know, in the short-term, again, the equity markets are volatile, driven by fear and greed. And that's, I think, what we saw a lot of in the last few days, particularly today. The two panels on the chart, the left-hand side is the TSX for the last 5 years. It's been extraordinarily volatile. A lot of that has to do with the high weighting of commodities we've seen and how that's come off. I think if you looked at a S&P TSX composite of just dividend paying stocks from high quality companies, it wouldn't be nearly as volatile. But that's the market. That's what we see on the news every night. The right hand panel is the same index going back to 1945. And you can see that over the long term, it's compounded at a 6.4% annualized return. That's before dividends. So the way we look at it is the volatility is kind of the price of admission for earning the higher long-term return from equities. It can be unnerving when you're going through it, but by staying the course, investing in high-quality companies, getting dividends, that sort of thing, have worked in the long term, and that's the way we look at the market going forward.
Robin, thank you.
The last question we've been getting, I guess, is on the Canadian dollar. You know, where is the Canadian dollar going to go? What are the risks there? What's happening? And we look at the Canadian dollar on purchasing power parity. So that's the economic theory that if you take your Canadian dollars, the U.S. dollars, and cross the border, you should be able to buy the same thing for the same price once you take the exchange rate into account. And when the Canadian dollar was trading at parity, it was about 20% overvalued. And if you think about your own experiences going to the United States, you could get a lot more for your dollar than you could in Canada 2 or 3 years ago when it was parity. Well, now the opposite is true. You know, look at the numbers for cross-border shopping. They've absolutely plummeted. We were at a conference last week. There was a gentleman from Vancouver speaking. He said on the radio, they typically talk about what the wait times are for the crossing, border crossing into Washington State. Now, 2 years ago, it was over an hour each way. Now it's about 5 minutes. So you can tell that people's behavior is changing with the currency. So I guess the big question is, how low could the Canadian dollar go? Well, right now, you're almost 20% undervalued. And over the long term, as you can see on the chart on page 12, we've got the currency. The relatively flat line is the purchasing power parity value, which is about 85 cents. So fair value for the currency is about 85 cents in our mind. And the dashed lines are 20% overvalued and undervalued. But right now, you're almost 20% undervalued, and that typically gets close to where it ends. It doesn't mean you can't overshoot. Currencies overshoot just like every other financial asset, but it typically is a long-term barrier for where you can get to. So we think the majority of the downside in the Canadian dollar is over, but we have a Bank of Canada governor who may just cut rates one more time. If that were to happen, you'd probably see more volatility to the downside in the Canadian dollar. So as you can see from the chart here, you typically stay overvalued or undervalued for a long period of time. So even though fair value is 85 cents, you can see there that it's pretty rare the currency actually trades at fair value. It's usually on its way through it up or down. So we think the currency is likely to stay under fair value for quite a while. But to get a reversal of, say, 5 cents on some strength in the oil market would not be out of the question at this point. So just to wrap it up, I guess address the big questions. We don't think this is a repeat of 2008. We think the U.S. economy is still expanding. The banking system is much safer than it was during the previous cycle. And there's not a lot of excess like we had in the last few cycles. Oil is not the economy. The correlation between oil and almost all financial assets has gone up meaningfully, and this can't go on forever. We continue to see earnings and dividend growth for the vast majority of the businesses we own for clients, and that's something that we find encouraging now that the prices have become more attractive on a lot of them. Canadian equities have cheapened a lot versus the U.S., so that's something we're looking at, not necessarily moving back, but we think the opportunities right now lie in Canada, particularly in things like the banks and the REITs. And lastly, the Canadian dollar, again, is quite oversold. We think in the meantime it trades with oil, and that's probably what leads to any near-term large correction to the upside.
Thank you very much, Rob. And again, on behalf of my partners, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today. As I mentioned at the outset, we recognize that this is a very trying time for investors. 2015 was a very difficult year. It was a year where not many asset classes provided positive returns, the exception being the U.S. dollar. And this year started out on a very challenged note. We will obviously do our absolute best to reach out to you as we can. Should you have questions, concerns, please reach out to us. We'll do our best to communicate with you as quickly as we can. And obviously, you know, the other comment I'd make is that this is in our industry, we say it's a fluid situation right now, and please expect us to be back reaching to you in the future with more conference calls as developments take hold. Thank you again for participating this afternoon, and we look forward to speaking with you soon. Bye-bye.